today we have Kirill from the University of Basel. He's going to tell us about his work on engineering and measuring higher order topology. So it's yours, Kirill.
Yeah, so thank you very much for the presentation. I'm really happy to be electronically at least at the Perimeter Institute in Canada. So I changed the title a little bit, but it's mainly the same thing. What I would like to talk about is a very fast, very short review of what I did during my PhD and the beginning of the postdoc, so which is SPT phases and let's say interplay of topology interactions. And then a little bit of a bigger overview of what I did during the last year of the postdoc, so during the last year, which is higher order topology. And so I did this, so PhD I did this under supervision of Karine Lure and Guillaume Roux from France, and postdoc from Basel in Switzerland, under supervision of Helena Klinova and Daniel Loss. But before beginning with all the stuff, I wanted to ask you a question. So how big of an introduction do you need? Let me be more specific. So how much of you know this stuff and understand this picture?
I think you might want to explain it. Maybe.
It's perfect. Because I made 5 slides of introduction just for this. So I'm really happy then. So what I wanted to talk about is basically topological states, topological phases in physics, more generally, let's say in nature. So here are a few funny examples that I'm pretty sure all of you are pretty familiar with. So first one is vortices. Everything's broken. I wanted to do this. So vortices and skirmions, basically some stuff which arise, let's say, in the context of hydrodynamics, classical magnetism, so completely non-quantum problems. So they have some funny properties, like so those are excitations which have some topological charge, and people try to use them right now, and at least it's something which has known since the time of Van Gogh, so quite a long time ago. Another funny example is so-called El Niño. So basically those are waves which exist close to the equator of the Earth, like heat waves, waves in the ocean, waves in the atmosphere. There was a recent work where these guys, the authors, they suggested that the explanation for this El Niño is actually topology of theirs, topology of the vector field which live on the sphere, so on the sphere which is Earth's surface. However, what I would like to talk to you about has nothing to do with this, of course. It's a much smaller, much more microscopical scale. It's topology in the context of condensed matter systems. And basically, so the typical problem that we want to consider in this context, typical problem of condensed matter systems, is let's say we have a system, we have a material, we want to understand the properties of this material, like this guy, for example, here. And we want to study something like conductivity of the system, heat conductivity, electric conductivity, something like this. So how do we do this? We describe this system by some models. Let's say we describe it by some Hamiltonian. We want to solve the corresponding problem, so to get eigenvalues, eigenvectors. Hopefully, in very often, we have some symmetries which could help us to do this, such as, let's say, translational symmetries, rotational symmetries. So let's assume translational symmetries. In this case, we have the Hamiltonian function of the momenta. We have eigenstates and eigenvectors function, eigenstates and eigenvalues function of the momenta. So we have something like this. Pretty funnily, this is something which has quite a precise notion in the context of mathematics. So it's called principal bundles over some key spaces, but it doesn't really matter. I will not use this definition anywhere afterwards. So the question you may ask, so what are the geometrical properties of such stuff? For example, what is the energy as a function of Q? This already provides a lot of information, such as whether it is an insulator or a conductor, let's say. But maybe it's not enough, it's not everything that you'll have. What you could have in addition, let's say the topology of this manifold, of this object. In general, it is a pretty hard question. What is the topology of the stuff, especially if the system is interacting? There is a few examples which really provide a very nice picture of what is going on. And the best example, I think, it's basically something which gave birth to the whole notion, the whole area of topological condensed matter systems, is the integer quantum Hall effect. So it's this system here. The system is pretty simple. We have a two-dimensional conductor, two-dimensional electron gas subjected to strong magnetic field and at low temperatures. And so this kind of setup was studied now 40 years ago in 1982, if I remember correctly. And what people wanted to study is like electric conductivity of such setups. So what happens if, is conductivity of the bulk of the system? What's the conductivity of the edges of the system? So what is the resistivity and the Hall resistivity, let's say. What they found was kind of surprising, not really expected. And so this gave birth to the notion of topological states of matter. So what they found is that the Hall conductivity, the conductivity along the edges, it changes by plateaus. So this plateau is like this one, this one, this one. Every plateau is perfectly quantized. And every plateau is very stable against perturbations equal to the system. So this quantization is proportional to some integer numbers, which are pretty stable, even though the system are quite dirty, especially 40 years ago, systems were not perfect. And like you change the geometry of the system, it doesn't change anything at all. And the reason why it is so is because the observables that they measure, the Hall conductivity, was related to the topology of the system, topology of Landau levels. The key, in this case, first Chern numbers, which are integer topological invariants. And so you may ask the question whether it is kind of general. So if you have some non-trivial topology of the system, whether it's always related to something like this, so presence of the gapless excitations that go around the boundary. It's kind of true. It's not exactly true if you take into account the interactions, but it's always true if you don't have interactions, so if it is a non-interacting system. It's something which is known as a bulk boundary correspondence. And basically, the idea to see this is pretty simple. So imagine that you have two systems, two setups. Let's call this setup one, this two. Far away from the boundary, you have like bands describing the system one, bands describing the system two, and you have some topological invariant, let's say C1 and C2. And then you bring the system close to each other. And so what you have as a result, so you have operation of this boundary between the two, and the system, this entire system shall kind of interpolate between the properties of this guy here and this guy here. And how it does it? It does it by closing the gap. So there is an emergence of some gapless excitations, and they're intrinsically related to the topology of the system. So this is kind of a simple picture. We don't really care too much about what are like the properties of the system. We just say that there is some topological invariant. So for some time, for basically 30 years since the discovery of the integer quantum Hall effect, people are trying to understand this stuff and classify the states of matter, topological phase transitions. Basically what they ended up with is this table that I showed you just at the beginning, where you see that what you need in order to classify the stuff is know the dimensionality of your problem. So this is classical dimension, not D plus one dimension like in quantum physics. And another thing that you need to know is the symmetries of the problem, and especially three main symmetries. So the time reversal, which is this guy here, the particle Hall or the charge conjugation, this guy here, the chiral symmetry, which is just the product of the two. And basically just based on the stuff, they are able to predict. So there's this work from 2008, 2010, the work by Kitai, the work by Schneider, the work by Ryu. So they made a classification of the stuff. They made a table which allows you to predict if you are in particular symmetry class, if you have particular dimension, what kind of topological invariants you could have. And so this is pretty nice classification, but there is a few problems. The first one is what happens if you have interactions? And the fortunate answer is, the fast answer is, it just doesn't work anymore. To be a little bit more specific, there is different possibilities. The first one is that just the topology will get destroyed. So you have your topological description, you switch on interactions, you would say break some symmetries, it doesn't work anymore. It's a very sad possibility. I won't discuss it too much. Another option, which is a little bit more optimistic, is that you could change the topology of the system by having the effect of these interactions. However, so in this scenario, you don't change too much. Like you will be able to see the same phenomena without interactions as well, or it is very similar to what you will have without interactions. The best known example, so something what I will put in this category is, let's say, SPT states, symmetry protected topological states. And the best known example is, let's say, AKLT states, which is from this fork here, which was before people understood this topological description. Basically, it's a model of spin one chain, which is because of particular interactions can be presented as just spin one half singlets and some spin one half and paired spin one half at the edges. So it is kind of bulk boundary correspondence, but in the interacting case. But there is a third option as well, which is perhaps the most interesting, the most exciting one. It's what happens if you have strong interactions, strong correlated systems. As you will have in this case, some states which actually do not have any analogous at the non-interacting world, which are, let's say, few examples. The first one is fractional contour Hall effect. The same picture as before, only instead of having integer plateaus, you have fractional plateaus, which means that instead of one charge of an electron which goes along the boundary, you have, let's say, a fraction of a charge of an electron which goes along the boundary. So it's something you will not be able to get without interactions. It's a non-Fermi liquid behavior. And then another, which is kind of another subject, which is not really unrelated to fractional quantum Hall effect, but people usually consider it in a different context. Those are quantum spin liquids. So this is the work I took from the my paper, the picture I took from the work from Juan on a frustrated spin one half model for V6Y interactions on the Honeycomb lattice. The reason is because I happen to work exactly on this model as well. And it's pretty funny. So this history of this model kind of starts from the beginning of the century, so 2000-ish years. Then there are some works on quantum version of this model in 2010 with some exact degeneralization studies. Then there was the tensor network DMRG study. Then there was a Monte Carlo study by Juan collaborators. Then there are some theoretical works. Then there was another exact degeneralization study, which we did. And the problem is all these methods kind of give different results. The problem is really hard, and we don't have good tools to solve such kind of systems. So it's hard to predict anything. That's why I'm kind of very excited about what you guys are doing. So this is like partial conclusion of what I wanted to present, the effect of interactions. However, this is only part of the story, because the second part of the story is what happens if you have not interactions, but you have some symmetries. In this case, what I mean by symmetries is unitary symmetries. So let's say lattice symmetry or special symmetries of the problem. And it's also pretty funny because when I was doing my PhD, basically the point of view of the community of physicists to this question was that it is a complicated question. It is a boring question. We don't really care about it too much. However, it changed quite drastically with work, which also was pretty recent, just 2017, by Benelka, Zarber, Novick, and Hughes. And this is a work on higher order topology. Basically, what the idea behind this work was pretty simple. What if we have some systems which have not just usual bulk boundary correspondence, but generalized bulk boundary correspondence? And by generalized bulk boundary correspondence, I mean, so the usual one is this role. You have a d-dimensional system, and you have d minus one dimensional edge states. Like in one dimension, you have corner states. In two dimension, you have hinge states, one dimensional states. In three dimension, you have two-dimensional surface states. But the idea was, okay, what if we have a two-dimensional system, but instead we have corner states, like these guys? Or we have three-dimensional system and have hinge states, or also corner states. This could go on and on. So if you manage to make a four-dimensional systems, you'll be able to have this error sheet, which will go down up to corner states as well. So this was a pretty interesting idea. The idea is pretty simple, but the formulas behind it is kind of complicated. I won't talk about it too much. What I would like to say is, since then, a lot of people started to work on it. A lot of experimenters tried to make such higher-order topological oscillators experimentally. So this is a few pictures from a bunch of different articles, different experimental works. For example, people try to propose models to get the states. Those are a few works from our group. People try to make a quantum simulator setup to make them, like these photonic waveguides, this work from the group of Mohamed Hafizi, using some LC circuits. But also there were some classical, completely classical setups, which I honestly like the most. So for example, the set of coupled mechanical resonators, like in this case or in this case. And the idea, so why it works, is because there is nothing really quantum mechanical in this higher order topological oscillators and topological oscillators. You could get everything just classically in principle. However, so the systems are not easy to use. And you can ask me, what do I mean by easy to use? Easy to use for what? So we'll come back to this point in a few slides. For instance, just trust me that it's not easy to use for what I want to say. And what we wanted to do is to propose a setup which will be better for this idea that I will present in a few seconds. And by this, I mean some mesoscopic setups, like some semiconductors, something that you will be able to just print on a chip, put in your phone. Like usually, since we are also interested in superconductivity, you will not be able to just put it on your phone. We have to freeze your phone down to like 1 Kelvin at least. It's what I mean, like something you will be able to make at a big scale, not these heavy setups which are based on mechanical resonators, for example. In particular, the stuff that I worked on during the last year was how to make a higher order topological superconductor which has Majorana corner states. So what are different ways to do this? One of the possibilities to do exactly what Ben-Alcazar and co-authors did, so uses multipolar polarization, so-called multipolar polarization. The idea is that if you have usual bulk boundary correspondence, you will present it in terms of some vector, like vector P, which just tell you that at one edge you have one configuration of the charge, one distribution of the charges. At second edge, second surface, let's say in this case, we'll have another distribution of the charges. However, the idea of Ben-Alcazar was, okay, let's say that this is zero. Instead, we have some quadrupolar polarization. So if you have quadrupolar polarization, you'll have hinge states. Then if this is also zero, you'll have octopolar polarization. If you have octopolar polarization, you'll have corner states. The point is, it's quite hard to imagine which kind of system do you need, which kind of terms do you need in order to have such multipolar polarizations. So it's why people try to consider different approaches. One of the approaches, kind of something which I called here, I don't think it's a notion is used in the literature, hierarchical constructure. The idea is that we first get this guy here, for example, just a usual boundary mode, and then you just gap them out somehow. So you have, first of all, a symmetry which protects this mode, like time reversal symmetry or particle hole symmetry. Then you break the symmetry. Usually it's time reversal symmetry. So what you had before this was something like this, gapless mode at the boundary. When you gap them out, you will have some fermions which have mass. And the idea is that by using some symmetries of the term which breaks this, which gaps out the H modes, you could get something which will be higher order topological oscillator. Now let me show how does it work in practice. So how does it work for this Majorana corner states? So the idea what we want to have a superconductor, which means that we want, so in this classification, we want to end up, so the final point will be this class here, because we should have particle hole symmetry, we should break the time reversal symmetry because we should break at least one of the symmetries. Then there is a two possibility to start with, so initial point, which could be like this one, for example, this class, which correspond to a helical topological superconductor, or this one, which correspond to just a usual topological insulator. So we considered this one, this approach here. I should not bar it, maybe I should just put. So we considered this approach because basically here the crucial point is how to get the helical topological superconductor, and then the way to get the corner states is really straightforward. So how to get such stuff? First of all, as I said, we need to get a helical topological superconductor, which means stuff is usual boundary modes, which is a superconductor, which is protected by some symmetry. So the symmetry should be the time reversal symmetry. So what we need to do this is a few ingredients. The first one is just some metal, let's say metal in 2D, 2D electron gas. Then we need to have some superconducting pairing. The question is which pairing, because there is a bunch of them. The best way will be to have a P-wave pairing. The problem is that if we actually discovered that there is a P-wave superconductor, it will be much bigger of a deal than just having this corner states, because no one have ever found any P-wave superconductor. So we cannot do this, unfortunately. So what we decided to do instead is to just use the usual S-wave superconductor. Some experimentalists work on a daily basis.
So this. Sorry, Kirill, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
A couple of slides ago, you mentioned, I think you're looking for this in mesoscopic systems. And now I'm waiting to see, what does that mean? Why mesoscopic?
It's a good question. So the definition, I don't know how to say definition of the, what is exactly the definition of the mesoscopic systems, let's say, such kind of systems were in principle small enough and such that quantum phenomena may be important. It's what I mean by mesoscopic systems in this context. So some kind of semiconductors coupled to superconductors, such kind of setup. In some sense,
are you talking about like a heterostructure or a junction or something like that?
Yeah. Like this as well. Some heterostructures, junctions, like semiconductor couplet, proximity couplet to superconductor, all these systems. Maybe it's not very precise, the definition. I just wanted to call it somehow.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, thanks. So when you have a 2D, when you're looking at a 2D electron gas or something, the idea is that's occurring in a heterostructure or something like that.
Yes, I mean, it's usually how do they do this? They do this kind of quantum wells, for example, to get, let's say, this TIs. And so I'm thinking about this quantum well structure. You have seen layers of some materials with given properties.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So we, first of all, the first ingredient, we want to have this helical topological superconductor, let's say. So basically, in order to do this, we need to use 2D electron gas plus superconducting pairing. And this just will not be enough. So we need to kind of make the superconducting pairing be a little bit more interesting than just this. There is a few approaches to do this. And basically, the best approach to do this is to use so-called spin orbit interactions. And basically, the name explains really everything that you need to know about this stuff. So you have coupling of some spin degrees of freedom, which is turned out here by some sigma, to some orbital degrees of freedom of the system. So basically, coupling to some momenta. You don't have to have like linear coupling here, like I present here. We'll have different kinds of coupling, but this is the usual one, which appears lowest on order in K, which is often the most important. So I just choose to have this one. And so what people also showed that basically if you have these two ingredients together, you could get kind of an effective P-wave pairing. So, or something which looks like an effective P-wave pairing. And so this is basically almost everything that we need. In addition, we need to have some kind of term which competes with superconducting pairing, because if S-wave superconductivity is too strong, it just destroys everything. But it's technical detail, I don't go too much into how we do this. There is a few proposals. So we just need to have some competition, and it's kind of easy to do this. So now if you put everything in, we just get our helical topological superconductor. So this is kind of feature that you obtain if you make a simulation of such kind of system. So you get a superconducting gap, and you get some states, exactly this boundary states that I showed you before, which are topological, which cross the gap, and the states in this case will be protected by the time reversal symmetry. This is the topological phase diagram that we obtained for our particular model. Like, don't care too much about the details. The main thing that I wanted to show here is that there is a topological phase here. It appears when this T, this gap, this competition between superconducting term in another mechanism is quite strong, but doesn't have to be very strong. When it's weak, we just have a trivial superconductor. And then we also need to kind of have isotropic spin orbit interactions, which is this axis here. And this is so strength over T over delta superconductor. And we have topological phase everywhere here. Now, if you have this, the rest is pretty straightforward. We just need to apply the Zeeman field, the magnetic field. How does it work and why does it work? First of all, if we have this superconductor, topological superconductor, we will have this states, like one state, which let's say state plus, second state which state plus, state minus. They are related to each other via time reversal symmetry. So one state goes to the right, one corresponds to right mover, second one corresponds to the left mover. And without magnetic field, we just have this stuff at low energies, some linear term and rho matrix act on the space of this right and left movers. Then when we add Zeeman field, we cap out these guys. And the crucial point is that the Zeeman field, we have a special symmetry that we need to be, it will have an inversion symmetry. So for example, if you look at this point here on some arbitrary geometry, and the point which is, let's say, on the opposite side of the surface of the system, the Zeeman field, this H state will see, will change sign. So this mass term will also change sign. And the resulting problem, it's pretty well studied. This is one of the simple problems you could imagine. So if you have this mass term which change sign, you will have some some modes which are attached to the, which are existed exactly at the point when it changed sign. And so in this case, those more modes are Majorana zero modes. And this is emergence of this modes is protected by the inversion symmetries. There is one funny moment, actually. One doesn't need to have corners to have these corner states. Why? Because whatever the geometry you have, Zeeman field, magnetic field, will just break the symmetry in the way you need. So for example, if you apply the magnetic field like this, you'll have the corner states which appear exactly at this, like the position of this corner states is exactly determined by the direction of the Zeeman field. If you rotate the Zeeman field, change the position of this corner states as well. And this is something which is a little bit different from the approach by Ben Alcazar, because for them, it appears only at the corners, or such the geometry will not have anything at all. So it's not exactly the same approach to have higher order topological insulators. So we try to do some numerical verifications, whether it works or not. This is the result of this calculations. So basically system, we consider system on a square geometry. I applied the Zeeman field like this, and we see the emergence of the corner states at two corners of the system. In this case, like it will appear at two extremities of the circle. Funny moments that in a square geometry, if you change the Zeeman field in a particular manner, so in particular, if it is parallel to one of the edges, just the whole edge will become gapless in this case. Like one edge you could think about is as a big corner state, this huge degeneracy which will emerge as well. And another interesting point is that as compared to the usual topological states, this spatial symmetry protected states are kind of stable against the perturbation which breaks the symmetry. The reason is, so it's not very important. So you could add some disorder, you could add another perturbation which will break the inversion symmetry which protects them. It will deform this surface in a very weird manners, and it won't affect the presence of such corner states as long as the surface gap is small enough, is big enough as compared to this perturbation. So it's something that we checked as well. This is the resulting phase diagrams that we obtained. So we have the emergence of this higher topological state, which in the like big part of the phase diagram.
Can you just say something about what you're calculating here? Is this a model or, you know, what is this calculation?
Yeah, I didn't want to scare you too much about the like Hamiltonian. So what we are really calculating is we have to basically, I just put all the ingredients that we have here to the electron gas. Proximity induced like kind of mean field, superconducting pairing, spin orbit interaction, and then Zeeman field. So it's kind of Hamiltonian which I considered here. and it's what I obtain. It is, in this case, it's single particle Hamiltonian, so it's not so heavy numerically. We still wanted to consider as big a system as possible, so it's why I tried to push it a little bit. But it's not the kind of problems which are heavy in the many body sense.
So can I ask a question? So what's this plot, right? Like, is it the density of a single particle state?
Sorry, it's the density of single particle state. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you have a bunch of energies. So this is basically the probability density, the wave function density associated to these two states, mm-hmm. corner states. So you have two of them, as you expect.
Okay, thanks. And then, so I guess, so this is very nice. You put all these ingredients, right? Kind of like with your intuition. But I guess what I was wondering is, like, do you see like a way of automatizing this discovery, right? Like, can you design some algorithm that can, like, that you tailor toward discovering these things?
You go a little bit of, it will be the end of my presentation. I will go to it, but it's a pretty good question. It's exactly what I'm thinking of while I'm presenting it to you, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this is basically the main result that I wanted to show. So if any one of you have some questions, just ask. Then I will say more about why it is, what is it for. If it is fine, then as promised, I wanted to say, so why mesoscopic systems? Why we are not satisfied with just having these mechanical resonators, which actually work pretty well? So the reason is basically we want to study interactions. And to explain why, let me go like 20 years back in the past. It's a work from Kitaev. Kitaev had a lot of models, a lot of interesting models people still consider up to now. And this is basically a simpler version of what I just presented to you. It's a just one wire, one dimensional system, one dimensional P wave topological superconductor. And it's topological because in particular region of the phase diagram, you have this bulk boundary correspondence, you have the emergence of Majorana zero modes, which are the kind of topological excitations in this model. Now the question is why, so what is so important about this Majorana zero modes? The idea is that two Majorana zero modes are in fact correspond more or less to one fermion. So each of them separately, so if I write something like this, for example, or in the original model, I had some fermions, then I write this fermions as in terms of real Majorana fermions. And what you have there is the emergence of this kind of decoupled Majorana fermions at the two extremities of this one-dimensional chain. Now the point is that those excitations are not fermions, even though people often call them like fermions. Those are non-abelian excitations. This kind of encode the topological degeneracy of the ground state manifold. And the idea that people understood, so what if we use this non-abelian excitations to kind of wind, so to do some computations with it. And the approach to do this is to do the braiding. Basically you have one Majorana zero mode, you have second Majorana zero mode, just interchange them, for example, what you'll get is the operation of this phase factor, minus one phase factor. If you just wind one Majorana zero mode around the second one, you will get something like this. And the idea is that because it is only related to, let's say, the topological nature of the state, you could think about this, like there is a quasi-particle, it has some world line attached to it, and once I cross this world line with another particle, I'll acquire some phase factor. This is just related to the topology of the node groups in two dimensions. This is pretty stable. You can perturb the system in whatever the way you want, cause some disorder, as long as you don't really do something very strong, very disruptive, which will break the topological description. You won't affect it in any way. So people wanted to do this to enhance, to kind of fight the decoherence which appear in other approaches to do quantum computation with usual spins which don't relate it to any topological notions at all. The problem, just using Majorana zero modes is not enough. You won't get too much by just having this phase factor. It's pretty shallow. You will not get a universal set of gate by doing this. People had some ideas of coupling this zero mods to something else, to other spin, to other qubits, like spin qubits, for example. This was the most considered in the literature, but this is not as stable as it was before. It will not be as stable as it was just based on the topological quantum computation. So people wanted to kind of enhance this, make it more interesting. The idea to do this was based on interactions. And one of the ideas was to use something which is called parafermions. So this is again coming back, coming from very old work from some Soviet journal of physics in 1995. Like you can always find something which was done by Soviet physicist 40 years ago, unfortunately, or at least very often you could do this. So what they proposed is that you have some systems with k-body interactions, and this will lead to some ZK algebra as compared to Z2 algebra for Majorana zero mods. So for Majorana zero mods, you basically have this relation. For parafermions, you have K parafermions, and you have this relation. And this, what it does is that it provides much, it improves kind of gates you will be able to obtain. You will be able to obtain much more gates. The problem is it's still not enough. And it's particularly related to, let's say, implementation of something like CNOT gates, this kind of entanglement gate between the two spins you will make out of this two qubits you will make out of this parafermions. So people try to go a little bit further, and there is a whole literature on topological quantum computing related to this. One of the simplest models to have a universal set of gates is a Fibonacci model, in which you have just one anion, which is denoted by this operator gamma. You have some trivial state, which is denoted by this operator one. You have some kind of fusion rules. So how people think about topological quantum computing right now is in terms of tensor category groups and this fusion rules. When you have two anions, you fuse them together and you get some outcome out of it. So this is the simple kind of processes you could have. You fuse one anion and trivial state, you get naturally the same anion. This is commutative, hopefully. And then you have this more complicated fusion rules when you fuse two anions. So you could get one trivial state, or you could also get gamma. So this plus is representing two possible outcomes of this fusion procedure. So you could either get one or second one. And this is surprisingly enough to make topological quantum computing, to make universal set of gates. It's kind of technical, in particular, in order to really encode to just one qubit, you will need to have four such kind of setups. So you will need to have four anions, but it's possible to do, and people have some ideas how to do this. The question is now: we have never observed any Majorana zero mods in the first place, unfortunately. Second question: we didn't observe parafermions nor Fibonacci models, or Fibonacci anions. The idea is how to do this, how to make such kind of parafermions, for example, because the theory for the Majorana zero mods is kind of understood, it's just a matter of experimental realization. So how to make parafermions? What people wanted to do is, let's say, let's start with Majorana zero mods, let's put in some interactions, let's see how it gives. There are some field theory arguments that it may lead to parafermions. People did quite a few works on it. Unfortunately, in 2011, there was a work by Fitkovsky and Kitaev, again Kitaev. He showed that it just won't work. They provided a full classification of interacting topological states in 1D. And this topological classification didn't allow to have any parafermions at all. The best you could have in this case is Majorana zero mods. So people wanted to kind of say, what could we do in this case? We could try to do some two-dimensional system or three-dimensional systems. The problem is just study the effect of interactions to dimensional system is already pretty hard. And so we don't know how to really make this interaction in such a way that you'll get these parafermions. And so there is an idea. So we could try to use some heavy machinery behind the study of one-dimensional systems with interactions, but not really consider one-dimensional interaction, but consider two-dimensional systems, which could be achieved, for example, using higher-order topological insulators. So the physics that really matters a lot is one-dimensional physics, something which happens at the boundary of the system. But the interactions could come from a two-dimensional world. So it kind of goes around this restriction by Kvitkovsky and Kitaev. And maybe it will work, maybe it won't work. I think that right up to now, no one really knows the answer to this question.
So, Kvitkovsky and Kitaev said like you can't enhance a 1D Majorana system to get Fibonacci fermions. Yeah. That's the point?
Parafermions, yeah, exactly.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Okay.
They did, they did some really classification of all possible topological states, even these interactions. So there is some nice stuff which allows you to do this in one dimension. For example, you have conformal field theory, which helps you quite a lot in this context. And the conclusion was that the classification in this case is Z8, and it basically means that it's even smaller than what you will get from just non-interacting topological states of matter. And it definitely excludes the possibility to have parafermions, which was very unfortunate because a lot of people relied on it. So, and here comes basically the conclusion of my presentation. So, there is, first of all, we don't really know how to solve two-dimensional problems very well. A bunch of methods like exact diagonalization suffer from the exponential decrease of the Hilbert space. So mean field methods based on the mean field theories like DMFT, density matrix, dynamical mean field theory, maybe are not so well suited to study strongly correlated states of matter. Tensor networks is my favorite method. I did a few work a little bit on it. It's based on these properties that you try to keep states which keep as much entanglement between different subpartitions of the system as possible. But as you know, it's much heavier to do this, so everything is much heavier to do in 2D or 3D. So you could do something like Meras, for example, but it's kind of new and it's not very well studied yet. And then there is Monte Carlo approaches which could suffer from the Fermi sign problem, for example. And so it's why I am personally very excited about what you guys are doing. Like machine learning could definitely help to solve these problems. But it's not the end of the story. What we actually don't even understand very well is what happens in the non-interacting case, just if you have topology with special symmetries. This is a kind of analogous of the topological classification I showed you before, only taking into account one particular type of symmetries which you could have. And you see that very fast it becomes very messy. It's three times bigger than the previous topological classification. And it's only one symmetry. Like if you have more symmetries, you'll get similar kind of classification for all the possible symmetries. So it's quite hard to do classification of such kind of states of matter. One needs to find some solutions to the problem. And one of the solutions which could be done is, for example, let's try to use machine learning techniques. So there's a few works that I know when people try to classify topological states of matter, but first of all, not higher order states, just the usual ones. And there's a few ideas how to make it not really, how to make it generic. Let's say you just have some Hamiltonian, and out of the properties of the Hamiltonian, out of the structure of the Hamiltonian, you want to know what will be the topological classification. For example, there is a work when you try to evolve the state with this Hamiltonian, and from these features, you will get some information about this topological description of the state. I think that there will be more stuff you could extract from it if you have higher topological insulators, because symmetries are important here. And symmetries is something which is quite easy to extract. But something which could be extracted by using machine learning techniques. You could see the Hamiltonian, just look at the Hamiltonian, and machine learning techniques could see something which we will not be able to see because it's kind of hidden behind behind some formalisms. So it's something that, as far as I know, no one really considered for the higher order topological states. Something that still could be done, something that still could be quite interesting. And this is basically the conclusion. I thank you very much for your attention. And please, if you have any question, let me know. I'm sorry, maybe I was a little bit fast. I hope that it was not too fast.
I think it's fine. Anybody has a question?
So regarding this last thing you said on the previous slide, do you have any sort of concrete strategy for, like, what, you know, not on the machine learning side, but what do you propose that you would, like, how would you attack this? You know, what is that you're trying to learn?
What you want to get is all these topological invariants. This is like the ultimate goal of what you want to obtain. In particular, you have a particular Hamiltonian. You want to get what is the topological environment which describes it. Then how to get it is a good question. So as far one of the ideas they have, so you have this Hamiltonian.
So you want to start from the Hamiltonian and learn that. It's very interesting.
One of the ideas is to start from the Hamiltonian. Somehow you just look at the symmetry of the Hamiltonian, you will be able to see this. But I think that maybe it's not the best way to do this. So another idea that, again, you start with the Hamiltonian, but you start with a random state and you propagate the state and you get some features from this state. I'm not entirely sure. I never tried to do this. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work so well. Another idea is that basically, so at least for the usual topological insulators, there is a huge data set. So there is a bunch of materials and people kind of predicted what the properties of the materials using some DFT calculations in some cases, or some ab initio calculations. And there is information about some structures of this, let's say unit cells, these materials, some information about the symmetry of these materials. So it provides, let's say, some input, and based on this input, you could try to make classifier. So I also know that some people try to do this. And there was a work by Bernavik and Nicolas Regnault in Paris when they did this classification. It's a kind of recent work. I didn't go too carefully through the details. I did it for just topological insulators, but they seem to work quite nicely. So I was wondering whether something like this could be also done for higher order topological states, because here the symmetries again are pretty important, and like symmetries is something which easier to obtain. But yeah, again, the question is, this is already a problem that I think no one addressed, but what we are will be really what I personally will be the most interested at the end, of course, is to study the effect of interactions. So how interactions change this, what you will get these interactions. I think that no one really addressed the question even how interactions and higher order topological insulators kind of work together.
I think it's a hard question, right?
I think, yeah.
So how would you go about addressing that issue? So what's the strategy?
So for which one? For
interactions in higher order topological
So for interactions, let's say it's a beginning. First of all, we need somehow some ways to be able to solve many broader problems. We need some ways to simulate to represent many body wave functions. So I guess the original point will not be so different from what you did quite a lot just many body states. We need some representation of the many body wave functions. And then in addition, this representation of the many body wave function could have some information about the special structures of the system.
So what would be first example you would try?
Just Boltzmann machines to solve the interacting topological states. This may be higher order topology.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest one because Boltzmann machine, as far as I know, so something that people did quite a lot. Then I'm not entirely familiar with the literature, how efficient it is, whether it is some better ways to do this, better neural network, neural networks. Yeah, I don't know.
Right, okay.
So because you are like having this kind of VMC approach where you have some sort of ANSAT, then you have Hamiltonian, and then you learn basically good representation of your many body states for that ANSAT. But then how do you have information about the topology? I mean,
It's a very good question, because the point is like you don't have local correlation functions which will tell you the information about this. It's basically why people say that it could be more complicated. It's a good question. I hope maybe somehow it works. So one of the stuff is there could be something related to the entanglement, some feature related to the entanglement which could be captured by this ANSATs based on the variantial Monte Carlo and the neural networks, possibly. I don't know. But I think that people try to do this for topological ordered states, and they are able to have some information about it. Why it works, I have no idea.
Yeah, so what they try to do, you had mentioned about them having some data set. Is it what you're talking about? Because then you look to me like some kind of supervised learning approach.
Yeah. This stuff, this data sets, I think that it's elite. So this is more for, higher order topological oscillators, a bunch of materials, a bunch of systems which have different structure, let's say the unit cell. And then based on the structure, you have some prediction, so people just calculated that they know that this material with the structure has a topological invariant. This material with the structure, it doesn't have topological invariant. Then you just feed all the stuff to the stuff, you will get the information. And then you put a new, so it will be supervised learning with this data set, which is the initial information that you have. But I'm not sure that it will work for the interaction case. And first of all, we don't really know how does it work with interactions.
Yeah, because in the data set first.
It's kind of in the data set, but in this data set we don't know too much about the interactions here. So I don't know. Yeah. This is kind of an opposite approach. So this one is more of based this supervised machine learning based on the data set. The second approach is more you have some system, you have some Hamiltonian, you want to find nice enough representation of the ground state to the Hamiltonian and see the features of this ground state.
So do you know whether somehow there are some features of the topology that could be like encoded like by hand, be put in the ANSAT in such a way that if we learn that feature, then we might have...
That's a good question. So at the single particle level, it's kind of... So there is some stuff that you can see. I mean, in principle, topological invariants, something that you could calculate classes, you could calculate just you have this Hamiltonian, you have the problem, you have, let's say, the ground state, you could calculate the topological invariant by hand. There is some formulas to do this, even for higher order topological oscillators, even though there it's quite heavy. So these features are usually related to, let's say, let's give an example. If you have a usual topological oscillator, let's say in 1D, with some symmetries like inversion symmetry, you have symmetry related points in the momentum space, assuming that you have translational symmetry. And you are interested in the parity of the eigenstates at this time reversal is this inversion invariant momentus. So this is directly related to the topological invariant you will get at the end. You'll basically just need to look at these two momentas, find the eigenstates at these two momentas, calculate the parity expectation values of the eigenstates, and it is your topological invariant. Okay. Something like this. The problem is also, this topological description is often related to assuming that you have perfect system with translational invariants, because approaches to do it without this is much harder.
I see. because I could imagine that if there is some sort of cost function that you could design by hand to learn a specific kind of topological invariant, maybe it might.
Yeah. It's a good idea. You could try to make some kind of cost functions. The problem is one should be able to make it as universal as possible, because in this approach, the ideas, all the cost functions will be different. Like the approaches really vary quite significantly. So one will need to make it as general as possible, such that the algorithm is able to learn from the different systems, different geometries that you have.
So how about, sorry, I interrupted. No? Okay. So I was wondering if you could do this on a quantum computer, because there are some recent proposals to measure chair numbers and topological invariants out of generalized measurements or POVMs, right? I think even last week there was some, I'm going to post one here. So can you imagine, doing the study of this interacting systems, let's say with variational quantum eigensolvers, and then using this generalized measurements to get this topological invariants somehow?
It's a good question. So I've seen a few works. To be honest, I didn't really understood why these methods, these variational methods, were working to classify the topological states. So what are really they are looking for, which makes this work. But yeah, so let's say calculation of the chair number, I guess it could, one could try to do this.
I mean, so I guess those VQE algorithms do the same thing you were saying you could do with neural nets, right? Which is kind of like you have a Hamiltonian you suspect may have this phases if you add interactions, right? Like then you can try to use this VQE, and then at the end you have to extract the information about what you're trying to study.
Yeah.
Right. And then trying to suggest or maybe ask is, there are this recent suggestions that you can get this many body chair numbers out of randomized measurements on a quantum computer. And so if you combine this VQE solution to your problem and you supplement it with generalized measurements or then maybe you can succeed at what you're trying to do. I don't know.
That's going to be a pretty good idea.
Wondering.
Yeah. Let's say this seems like it's going to be a pretty good idea. Say, for instance, really the point is I don't see how one would relate, the analytical formalistic calculation of the chair number to something you will get from a variational approach from the tensor network. But I think that one should be able to do this somehow. It's a good point. I am not entirely sure how well could it work.
I mean, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Any other question? Well, if no question is... Thank you, Ian, for this very nice talk.